They're not going to show those on TV, are they? They're not going to show Lily, will they? Bosch closed his eyes and pressed the phone hard against his ear. No, ma'am, that won't happen. The photos are evidence and they won't be released. There may come a time when they will be used in the trial, but if that happens, the prosecutor assigned to the case will discuss it with you. Or I will. You will be kept informed about everything involved in the prosecution. I'm sure of that. Okay, detective, thank you. I never thought this day would come, you know. Yes, ma'am. I know it's been a long time. Do you have children, detective? I have a daughter. Keep her close. Yes, ma'am, I will. I'll get back to you soon. Bosch put the phone back in the cradle. How'd that go? Bosch swiveled in his seat. Chu had come back into the cubicle without his noticing. About how they all go, he said. Just two more victims. Yeah, where are they? Dayton. What's happening with the others? Everybody's about to head out. I think they've seen enough for one day. It's truly horrible stuff. Bosch nodded. He checked the clock on the wall again. It had been a long day, almost 12 hours for him. Chu was talking about the other detective teams that were assigned to the investigation and had been sifting through videos of torture and murder for the past 6 hours. I was going to head out with them, Harry, if that's okay. Sure, I gotta go home, too. I think we're in good shape for tomorrow, don't you? They had a 9 a.m. appointment at the district attorney's office to present their case and seek murder charges against Hardy in the Lily Price case. Bosch turned sideways to his desk and put his hand on the thick pocket file that contained the reports they would give to the DA, the package. Yeah, Bosch said, I think we're set. Okay, then I'm out of here. I'll see you in the AM. We meet here and walk over?
Yeah.
Chu was a backpack guy. He swung his bag over his shoulder and headed out of the cubicle.
Hey, David, Bosch said, before you go.
Chu turned back and leaned on one of the cubicle's 4-foot walls.
Yeah?
I just wanted to say you did good today. We did good as partners. Chu nodded. Thanks, Harry.
So never mind all that stuff from before, okay? We'll just start from here.
I told you I'd make it up.
Yeah, so go home. And I'll see you tomorrow.
See you, Harry.
Chu went off, a happy man.
Bosch saw there had been a moment of expectancy in his face. Maybe a make-up beer or a bite of food would have solidified the partnership further. But Harry needed to get home. He needed to do exactly what Mrs. Price had told him to do.
The new PAB cost nearly $500 million and had a 500,000 square feet of space in its 10 floors of limestone and glass, but it didn't have a snack bar and parking was available for only a privileged few of high rank. As a detective 3, Bosch barely made the grade, but taking advantage of parking in the PAB's subterranean garage was a costly perk. A fee would be deducted from his paycheck each month. He opted out because he could still park for free in the old Erector set, the rusting steel parking structure located 3 blocks away and behind the old police headquarters, Parker Center. He didn't mind the 3-block walk to and from work. It was right through the heart of the Civic Center and a good length for prepping for the day ahead or decompressing after it. Bosch was on Main Street, crossing behind City Hall, when he noticed the black town car cruise quietly up in the bus lane and stop at the curb 20 feet in front of him. Even as he saw the rear window glide down, he acted like he had not noticed and kept walking, his eyes on the sidewalk in front of him. Detective Bosch! Bosch turned to see Irvin Irving's face framed in the open rear window of the Lincoln.
I don't think we have anything to say to each other, Councilman.
He kept walking, and soon enough, the town car pulled forward and started moving next to him, matching his speed.
Bosch may not have wanted to talk to Irving, but Irving certainly wanted to talk to him.
You think you're bulletproof, Bosch?
Bosch waved him off.
You think this big case you just scored makes you bulletproof? You're not bulletproof. Nobody is.
Bosch had had enough. He suddenly veered toward the car. Irving pulled back from the window as Bosch put his hands on the sill and leaned in. The car came to a slow stop. Irving was alone in the back seat.
I had nothing to do with that story in the paper yesterday, okay?
I don't think I'm bulletproof. I don't think I'm anything. I was doing my job, that's all.
You blew it. That's what you did.
I didn't blow anything. I told you I had nothing to do with it.
You have a problem, go talk to the chief.
I'm not talking about a newspaper article. I don't give a good goddamn about the LA by God Times. Fuck them. I'm talking about you. You blew it, Bosch. I counted on you and you blew it.
Bosch nodded and dropped down to his haunches, still holding onto the car's windowsill.
Actually, I got the case right and you and I both know it. Your son jumped. And more than anybody, you know why. The only mystery left is why you asked for me. You know my history. I don't lie down on cases.
You fool. I wanted you for exactly that reason. Because I knew that if they got even the slimmest chance, they would turn this into a play on me, and I thought you would have enough integrity to stand up against it. I didn't realize you had your nose so far up your former partner's ass that you couldn't see the setup she was running.
Bosch laughed and shook his head as he stood up.
You're good, Councilman.
The right outrage, judicious use of off-color language, the planting of seeds of distrust and paranoia. You might be able to convince somebody with all of that, but not me. Your son jumped. And that's all there is to it. I feel bad for you and his wife, but the one I feel most sorry for is his son. He didn't deserve this.
Bosch stared down at Irving and watched the old man attempt to modulate his rage.
I have something for you, Bosch. He turned away to reach back across the seat, and Bosch had a fleeting thought of Irving turning back and pointing a gun at him. Irving's ego and arrogance were such that he could actually bring himself to do it and believe he could get away with it. But when Irving turned back, he proffered a piece of paper through the window.
"What is it?" Bosch asked.
"It's the truth," Irving said.
"Take it."
Bosch snapped the document out of his hand and looked at it.
It was a photocopy of a phone message form dated May 24th and addressed at the top to someone named Tony. There was a return number with a 323 area code and a handwritten message that read, "Gloria Waldron complained that she got into a B&W cab at Musso Frank last night and driver was obviously drunk. She had him pull over so she could get out. Could smell alcohol in the cab, etc. Please call for follow-up."
Bosch looked from the photocopy back to Irving.
"What am I supposed to do with this? You could have written it up this morning."
"I could have, but I didn't."
"So what happens if I call this number?"
"This Gloria Waldron swears to me she called in this complaint, and then you happened to mention it to Bobby Mason at Chad Irving's party?"
"It doesn't wash, Councilman."
"I know it doesn't. It's a dead line. Now, my community outreach officer, Tony Esperante, remembers calling her and getting the details, and I passed them on to Mason, but the line is disconnected now. And look at the date, Detective."
"I did."
"May 24th. What's it mean?"
"May 24th was a Tuesday.
She said she got into the cab at Musso's the night before."
Bosch nodded.
"Musso's is closed Mondays," he said. "The call, if there was a call, was bogus."
"That's right."
"Are you trying to tell me you were set up, Councilman?
By your own son? That you innocently passed information on to Mason without knowing you were doing your son's bidding?"
"Not by my son, but by someone."
Bosch held up the photocopy.
"And this is your proof?"
I don't need proof, I know. Now you do, too. I was used by someone I trusted. I admit that. But so were you. Up there on the 10th floor, you gave them the means to take the shot at me. They used you to get to me. Well, that's an opinion. No, it's the truth, and someday you'll know it. You watch. They'll come to you at some point, and you'll see it. You'll know. Bosch handed the photocopy back, but Irving didn't take it. You keep it. You're the detective. Irving turned and said something to his driver, and the town car started to pull away from the curb. Bosch watched the smoked window glide back up into place as the car moved back into the traffic lane. He stood there for a long moment, considering what had been said. He folded the photocopy and put it in his pocket. Chapter 40. It was almost 11:30 by the time Bosch and Chu got to the Bahia Vista Apartments on Tuesday morning. Bosch had called ahead and talked to Hannah Stone. She told him Clayton Pell was scheduled to report to work at the market at noon, but agreed to hold him at the facility until the detectives arrived. At the front gate, they were buzzed through without delay. Stone came to greet them in the entranceway. It was awkward because Bosch was with his partner and it was all business. He extended his hand and they shook. Chu did the same. Okay, we have set you up in one of the interview rooms, if that's all right. That's perfect, Bosch said. He had talked to her on the phone for more than an hour the evening before. It was late, after his daughter had gone to bed. Bosch had been too keyed up from the day's events to sleep. He had called Hannah and sat on the deck with the phone until close to midnight. They talked about many things, but mostly the Hardy case. She was more informed than anyone who had watched the news or read the Los Angeles Times. Stone led Bosch and Chu into a small room with two stuffed chairs and a couch. I'll go get him, she said. Should I sit in again? Bosch nodded. If it will make him more comfortable and get him to sign the document. I'll ask him. She left them there, and Chu looked at Bosch with raised eyebrows. When I interviewed him last week, he would only talk to me if she was in the room. He trusts her. He doesn't trust cops. Got it. And by the way, Harry, I think she digs you. What are you talking about? The way she was looking at you with that smile. I'm just saying. I think it's there if you want it. Bosch nodded. I'll keep it in mind. Bosch sat down on the couch, and Chu took one of the chairs. They said nothing else as they waited. They had spent 2 hours that morning delivering the charging package to a filing deputy in the DA's office. His name was Oscar Benitez, and Bosch had taken him cases before. He was a good, smart, and cautious deputy assigned to major crimes. His job was to make sure the police had a case before filing charges against a suspect. He wasn't a pushover, and that was one of the things Bosch liked about him. Their package had been received well by Benitez. He just wanted a few things cleaned up or formalized. One of them was Clayton Pell's contribution to the prosecution of Chilton Hardy. Bosch and Chu were here to make sure that part of the case was on solid ground. When Benitez was told of Pell's pedigree, he became concerned about his role as a key witness and whether he might try to work the prosecution for some sort of payoff or might work the other side and be willing to change his story. Benitez made a strategic decision to put Pell on paper, meaning get him to sign a statement. This was rarely done, because a statement not only locks the details of a story into place, but also must be turned over to the defense in discovery. A few minutes later, Stone came in with Clayton Pell. Bosch pointed him to the remaining chair. Clayton, how are you? Why don't you sit there? This is my partner, Detective Chu. I don't think you met before. Chu and Pell exchanged nods. Bosch looked at Stone as if to ask if she was staying or leaving. Clayton would like me to sit in again, she said. That's fine. We can share the couch.
Once everyone was seated, Bosch opened his briefcase on his lap and started talking as he removed a file.
Clayton, have you been watching the news since last night?
Sure have. Looks like you got your man.
He folded his legs up under him. He was so small, he looked like a child seated in the big stuffed chair. Yesterday we arrested Chilton Hardy for the murder I spoke to you about last week.
Yeah, that's cool. Did you arrest him for what he did to me?
Bosch was anticipating that Pell would ask him exactly that question. Well, we are hoping to bring a number of charges against him. That's why we're here, Clayton. We need your help.
And like I said last week, what do I get out of it?
Well, just like I said last week, you get to help us put this man away for good. Your tormentor. You may even get to face him in court if the DA needs you as a witness against him. Bosch opened the file on his briefcase. My partner and I spent the morning at the DA's office presenting our case against Hardy in the murder of Lily Price. We have a good solid case, and it's only going to get better as the investigation continues. The DA plans to file a murder charge before the end of the day. We told him about your role and how it was actually your blood found on the victim, and...
What role? Pell shrieked. I told you I wasn't even there, and now you're telling the DA I had a role in it?
Bosch dropped the file on his briefcase and held both hands up in a calming gesture. Hold on, Clayton. That's not what we did at all. That was a poor choice of words. But you have to let me finish. What we did was walk him through the case. What we knew, what the evidence is, and how we see it all hanging together, all right? We told him your blood was on the victim, but you weren't even there. And not only that, but you were just a kid at the time, and there's no way you were involved. So he gets all of that, okay? He knows you were a victim of this guy as well. Pell didn't respond. He turned sideways on the chair, as he had done the week before. Clayton, Stone said, please pay attention. This is important.
I gotta go to work.
You won't be late if you listen and don't interrupt. This is very important, not only for this case, but for you too. Please turn around and listen. Pell reluctantly turned back in his seat so that he was facing Bosch.
Okay, I'm listening.
All right, Clayton. I'll give it to you straight. There is only one crime that doesn't have a statute of limitations on it. Do you know what that means?
It means they can't charge you after a certain amount of time's gone by. Like for sex crimes, it's usually 3 years.
Bosch realized that Pell had more than a passing familiarity with the statute of limitations. While he was in prison, he probably researched the California statute because of his own crimes. It was a grim reminder that the petulant little man who sat across from him was a dangerous predator, and predators always knew the lay of the land they walked. The statute of limitations for most sex crimes was 3 years. But Pell was wrong. Based on various exceptions to the statute on the basis of age and crime, Hardy could have been prosecuted for the crimes against Pell up until Pell was 28 years old. But even though Pell had been telling this story to prison evaluators for years before he was that age, nobody ever bothered to push for an investigation. Bosch was sure Hardy's run as a predator was over, and he would pay for at least some of his crimes. But he would never pay for what he did to Clayton Pell. That's generally right, Bosch said. It's usually 3 years. So then you probably know the answer to your own question. We can't charge Hardy with what he did to you, Clayton. But that doesn't matter because you can play an instrumental part in his prosecution for murder. We told the DA that it's your blood on Lily Price and you will be able to tell a jury how it got there. You will be able to testify about what he did to you, the sexual and physical abuse. You will provide what is called bridge testimony, Clayton. You will help us build a bridge from the DNA found on that girl to Chilton Hardy's doorstep. Bosch picked up the document again. One of the things the DA needs right now is a signed statement from you that sets forth the facts of your relationship with Hardy. This morning, my partner and I wrote this up based on my notes from last week. I want you to read it, and if it is accurate, then sign it, and you will be helping make sure Hardy spends the rest of his life on death row. Bosch offered him the document, but Pell waved it away.
Why don't you just read it to me out loud?
Bosch realized that Pell probably couldn't read. There was no indication in his record that he had ever attended school with any regularity, and he certainly wasn't encouraged to read or educate himself at home. Bosch proceeded to read the 1.5-page document. It purposely followed the adage that less is more. It briefly outlined Pell's acknowledgement that he lived in Hardy's home at the time of the Lily Price murder and was abused during the period both sexually and physically. It described the physical abuse in regard to the use of Hardy's belt and stated that Pell often sustained beatings that led to his bleeding from wounds on his back. The statement also described Pell's recent identification of Hardy in a photographic lineup, as well as his accurate recognition of the home he lived in with Hardy in the late 1980s. The undersigned agrees with these facts and believes them to be a true and accurate accounting of his involvement with Chilton Aaron Hardy, Jr. in 1989, Bosch read. And that's it. He looked at Pell, who was nodding his head as if in agreement. Is that good? Bosch prompted.
Yeah, it's good, Pell said. But it mentions that Chill took a picture of me copping his joint.
Well, not in those words, but...
Does that part need to be in there?
I think it does, Clayton, because we found the photo you told us Hardy took. We found the shoebox. So we want it in your statement because the photo corroborates what you say.
I don't know what that means.
You mean corroborate? It means like it confirms your story, it verifies it. You say this is what the guy made you do, and then here's the picture that proves it.
So people are going to see the picture?
Very few people. It will not be released to the media. It's just an element that helps build the case.
Besides that, Stone interjected, there is nothing to be ashamed about, Clay. You were a child, he was an adult. You were under his command and control. He victimized you, and there was nothing you could do about it.
Pell nodded, more to himself than Stone. Are you willing to sign the statement? Bosch asked. It was put up or shut up time.
I'll sign it, but what happens next?
We take it back to the DA, and it goes in the file, and is back up on the charges he'll file this afternoon.
No, I mean to him, to Chill. What happens next with him?
Bosch nodded. Now he understood. He's being held right now without bail in the Metropolitan Detention Center. If the DA's office files the charges today, he'll be arraigned tomorrow morning in Superior Court. He'll probably get a bail hearing, too.
They're giving him bail?
No, I didn't say that. He's entitled to a bail hearing. Everybody is. But you don't have to worry. This guy's not going anywhere. Hardy will never breathe free air again.
Could I go to that and talk to the judge?
Bosch looked at Pell. He immediately understood the request, but was surprised by it anyway. I don't think that would be smart, Clayton. You being a potential witness. I'll check with the DA's office if you want, but I think they'll say no. I think they want to hold you back and spring you at the trial, not have you sitting in court, especially when Hardy is there.
All right. I just thought I'd ask and all.
Sure. Bosch motioned with the witness statement toward his briefcase. You want to sign this on here? Might be the best way to do it. Only flat surface we've got.
Yeah.
The small man hopped out of his chair and came over to Bosch. Harry reached in his pocket for a pen and handed it to him. He bent down,
his face very close to Bosch's and poised with the pen over the document. When he spoke, Bosch could feel his hot breath on his face.
You know what should be done to this guy, don't you?
Who, Hardy?
Yeah, Hardy.
What should be done?
They should hang him by his balls for what he did to that girl and to me and all the others. I saw the TV last night. I know what he's done. They should bury him ass up and 10 feet deep. Instead, they'll put him on 60 Minutes and make him a star.
Bosch shook his head once. Pell was making some big leaps. I'm not so sure what you mean about making him a star, but my guess is that they'll go for the death penalty and they'll get it. Pell laughed derisively.
That's a fucking joke. If you're going to have the death penalty, then you got to use it, not dance around it for 20 years.
This time Bosch nodded in agreement but said nothing further. Pell scratched his name on the document and proffered the pen to Bosch. When Harry took it, Pell held onto it. They looked at each other for a moment.
You don't like it any more than I do,
Pell whispered.
Do you, Detective Bosch?
Pell finally released the pen, and Bosch put it into one of his inside coat pockets. No, he said, I don't. Pell backed away then, and they were finished. 5 minutes later, Bosch and Chu were heading out through the iron gate when Bosch suddenly stopped. Chu turned and looked back at him, and Bosch tossed him the keys to the car. Get it started, he said. I forgot my pen. Bosch went back to Hannah Stone's office. She seemed to be expecting him. She was standing in the reception area waiting. Come on back, detective. They went back into the interview room, and she closed the door. When she turned around, the first thing she did was kiss him. Bosch got embarrassed.
What?
She asked. I don't know, he said. I don't think we should be mixing things like this.
Okay, I'm sorry. But you did come back, just like I guessed you would.
Yeah, well... He smiled at being caught in the inconsistency. Look, how about tomorrow night? He asked, after Hardy's arraigned. It sounds odd to say I want to celebrate, but it's like... When you put another one down, it feels good, you know?
I think so. And I'll see you tomorrow night.
Bosch left her then. Chu had pulled the car up directly out front, and Harry jumped into the passenger seat.
So, Chu said, did you get her number?
Just drive, Bosch said. Chapter 41. On Wednesday morning, Bosch and Chu decided they would go to court to witness the first step of the judicial process involving Chilton Hardy. While they were not needed for the proceedings involving Hardy's first appearance on the murder charge, Bosch and his partner wanted to be there. It was rare in homicide work that an investigator brought to ground one of the true monsters in the world, and Hardy was one of them. They wanted to see him shackled and displayed, brought before the people. Bosch had checked with the MDC and knew that Hardy was on the bus transporting white inmates. It was the second bus scheduled for departure. This would put off his appearance in court until at least 10. It gave Harry time to drink a coffee and glance at the stories the investigation had generated in the morning papers. The phones in the cubicle kept ringing unanswered as journalists and producers left a series of messages seeking comment or inside access to the ongoing investigation. Bosch decided to get away from the noise and head over to the courthouse. As he and Chu stood and put their jackets on, without conferring they had both come dressed in their A suits, Harry could feel the eyes of the squad room on them. He went over to Tim Marcia's desk and told him where they were going. He said that they would be back directly after Hardy's appearance unless the prosecutor assigned to the case wanted to talk to them.
Who got the case? Marcia asked.
Maggie McPherson, Bosch said.
Maggie McPherson? I thought she was up in the valley.
She was, but now she's in major crimes. It's a good break for us. Marcia agreed. They took the elevator down, and there were reporters waiting outside the PAB.
A few of them recognized Bosch, and that started the stampede. Bosch brushed them off with no comment, and he and Chu headed to the sidewalk. They crossed first, and Bosch pointed to the monolithic Times building. "Tell your girlfriend she did a good job with the story in today's paper." "I told you, she's not my girlfriend," Chu protested. "I made a mistake with her, and it's been corrected. I didn't read the story, but whatever she got without my help." Bosch nodded and decided he would finally let up on Chu about it. It was behind them now. "So, how's your girlfriend?" Chu asked, jabbing back at Bosch. "My girlfriend? As soon as I meet her, I'll ask how she's doing and let you know." "Come on, Harry. You gotta go for that. I saw the look, man. Didn't you just fall in and out of the shit by allowing a work relationship to become something more than a work relationship? Your situation is something totally different." Bosch's cell buzzed, and he pulled it and looked at the screen. "Speak of the devil." It was Hannah Stone. Bosch pointed to the phone as he answered it, so Chu would know not to say anything in background. "Dr. Stone, I guess that means you're not alone." There was stress in her voice. "No, but what's up?" "I don't know if it means anything, but Clayton Pell didn't come back to the facility last night, and it turns out that he didn't go to work when he left here after signing the statement for you." Bosch stopped on the sidewalk and took a moment to compute this. "And he's still not back?" "No, I just found out when I came in."
"Did you call his work?"
"Yes, I talked to his boss. He said Clayton called in sick yesterday and never showed, but he left here right after you left. He said he was going to work."
"Okay, but what about his PO? Was he informed last night?"
"Not last night. I just called him before calling you. He said he hadn't heard anything but would do some checking. And then I called you."
"Why did you wait until this morning? He's gone almost 24 hours now."
"I told you, I just found out. Remember, this is a voluntary program. We have rules, and everyone must abide by them when they're here. But when someone takes off like that, there's really very little you can do about it. You wait and see if they come back, and you inform probation and parole that he's left the program. But because of what happened this week, and him being a witness in the case, I thought you should know."
"Okay, I get it. So, any idea where he would have gone? Does he have friends or family around?"
"No, he's got nobody."
"Okay, I'll make some calls. Let me know if you hear anything."
Bosch closed the phone and looked at Chu. An uneasy feeling was rising in his chest. He thought he might know where Pell was.
"Clayton Pell is in the wind. He apparently took off right after we talked to him yesterday."
"He's probably..."
But Chu didn't finish, because he didn't have a good answer. Bosch thought he did. He called the communications center and asked an operator to run the name Clayton Pell through the computer to see if he'd had any recent interaction with the justice system.
"Okay," the operator said. "We have a Clayton Pell arrested yesterday on a 243 felony class."
Bosch didn't need a translation on California Penal Code 243. Every cop knew it. Battery on a peace officer.
"What agency?" he asked. "It was us, but I don't have the details other than that he was taken into custody at the PAB.
Bosch had been out of the PAB for most of Tuesday, but when he'd gotten back at the end of the day, he'd heard some squad room chatter about a cop having been attacked in the plaza, right out front. It was completely unprovoked. The cop suffered a broken nose when the attacker stopped him to ask a question and then inexplicably head-butted him in the face. But the attacker was dismissed in the banter as a crazy, and his name was never mentioned. Bosch now knew what had happened. Pell had made his way downtown and to the PAB with the purpose of getting arrested. This would ensure that he would be booked into the nearby Metropolitan Detention Center, where he knew Hardy was being held. Anyone arrested in downtown by the LAPD would be booked into the MDC as opposed to any of the other city and county jails that served as regional booking locations. Bosch disconnected the call, then went to the recent call list on his phone and picked the number of the MDC watch office. It was the number he had called earlier to check on Hardy's schedule. "What is it, Harry?" Chu asked. "Trouble," Bosch said. His call was answered.
"Metro Detention, Sergeant Carlisle, can I put you on?"
"No, don't put me on hold. This is Bosch, LAPD. We spoke a little while ago."
"Bosch, we're kind of busy at the moment. I need..."
"Listen, I think there's going to be an attempt on Chilton Hardy's life. The guy I called about."
"He's already gone, Bosch."
"What do you mean, gone?"
"We put him on the sheriff's bus. He's headed to the courthouse for arraignment."
"Who else is on the bus? Can you check a name?"
"Clayton Pell. That's Paul Edward Lincoln Lincoln."
"Hold on." Bosch looked at Chu and was about to update him when the watch sergeant came back on the line, unmistakable urgency in his voice.
"Pell is on the bus with Hardy. Who is this guy, and why weren't we informed that these two had an issue?"
"We can talk about all of that later. Where's the bus?"
"How would we know? It just left."
"Do you know the route? Which way does it go?"
I think it's San Pedro to First and then up to Spring. The garage is on the south side of the courthouse."
"Okay, get on the phone to the sheriff's office, tell them what they've got, and stop the bus. Keep Pell away from Hardy."
"If it's not too late."
Bosch disconnected without reply. He turned and started back toward the PAB.
"Harry, what's happening?"
Chu called out as he followed.
"Pell and Hardy are on the jail bus. We have to stop it."
Bosch pulled his badge off his belt and held it up as he stepped into the intersection of Spring and First. He raised his hands to stop traffic and moved diagonally across the intersection. Chu followed. Once they were safely across, Bosch ran to a row of three black and whites parked in front of the PAB Plaza. A uniformed cop was leaning against the front fender of the first car and busy looking at his phone. Bosch slapped his hand on the roof as he ran up. He was still holding his badge out.
"Hey, need your car. We've got an emergency."
Bosch opened the front passenger door and jumped in. Chu got in the back. The uniform jumped off the fender, but didn't go toward the driver's side door.
"Can't, man. We're waiting on the chief. He's got a homeowner's meet."
"Fuck the chief," Bosch said.
He saw that the officer had left the keys in the ignition and the car running. He raised his legs out of the footwell and slid into the driver's seat, moving around the shotgun rack and the mobile computer terminal.
"Hey, wait a minute!" the cop yelled.
Bosch dropped the car into drive and bolted away from the curb. He reached up to hit the siren and lights and then sped down First. He went three blocks in 10 seconds and then took a wide left turn onto San Pedro, keeping as much speed as he could hold on the curb.
"There!" Chu yelled.
A sheriff's bus was lumbering down the street and coming toward them. Bosch realized the driver hadn't gotten the message relayed from Carlisle at MDC. He pinned the accelerator and moved on a direct line toward the bus.
"Harry!" Chu called out from the back. "What are you doing? That's a bus!"
At the last moment, Bosch hit the brakes and yanked the wheel left, bringing the car into a sideways skid and stopping it in the direct path of the bus. The bus lurched into a skid as well and came to a stop 4 feet from Chu's door. Bosch jumped out and moved toward the front door of the bus, holding his badge high. He hammered the heel of his palm hard on the steel door.
"LAPD, open up. This is an emergency."
The door was cranked open and Bosch was looking at the business end of a shotgun held by a uniformed sheriff's deputy. Behind him, the driver, also a uniformed deputy, held his sidearm aimed at Bosch as well.
"Let's see some ID to go with that badge."
"Call your dispatch. MDC put through a stop order." He threw his ID case up to the driver.
"You got a guy on there who's going to try to take out another."
Bosch had no sooner said it than he heard sounds of a commotion erupt from the back of the bus, followed by shouts of encouragement.
Do it, kill that motherfucker.
Both deputies turned back to look, but froze.
"Let me on," Bosch yelled.
The driver finally yelled, go, get in there. He slapped his hand down on a red button that unlocked the cage door leading to the rear of the bus. The deputy with the shotgun went through, and Bosch went up the steps into the bus to follow. "Get back up!" he yelled as he passed the driver and followed the other deputy into the back. Almost immediately, the deputy went down, as he was tripped somehow by a prisoner able to extend his shackled feet into the aisle. Bosch didn't stop. He went right over the deputy's back and further toward the rear of the bus. The attention of every prisoner on the bus was directed to the rear right side, where Bosch saw Clayton Pell standing and leaning over the seat in front of him. He had wrapped a chain around Chilton Hardy's neck and was strangling him from behind. Hardy's face was purple and his eyes bugged. He could do nothing to defend himself because his wrists were shackled at his waist. "Pell!" Bosch yelled. "Let him go!" His shout was lost in the chorus of men shouting for Pell to do the opposite. Bosch took two more steps and launched his body into Pell, knocking him back from Hardy, but not away. Bosch realized that Pell was cuffed to the chain that was around Hardy's neck. It was the chain that was supposed to be around Pell's waist. Bosch moved his hands toward the chain, shouting at Pell to let it go. The deputy soon recovered, but couldn't take his hands off the shotgun to help. Chu moved past him and tried to grab the chain pulled tightly against Hardy's throat. "No, pull his hand!" Bosch yelled. Chu worked one of Pell's hands while Bosch worked the other, and they soon overpowered the smaller man. Bosch pulled the chain off of Hardy's neck, and he collapsed forward, his face hitting the back of the seat in front of him before his body fell into the aisle at Chu's feet.
"Let him die!" Pell yelled. "Let that fucker die!"
Bosch shoved Pell back into his seat and then leaned his whole weight on top of him.
"You stupid fool, Clayton," Bosch said. "You'll go back in for this."
"I don't care. I got nothing outside anyway."
His body shuddered, and he seemed to give up strength. He started moaning and crying, repeating,
"I want him dead! I want him dead!"
Bosch turned to look into the aisle. Chu and the deputy were tending to Hardy. He was either unconscious or dead, and the deputy was checking his neck for a pulse. Chu had his head down and his ear turned toward Hardy's mouth.
"We need paramedics!" the deputy yelled to the driver. "Fast! I'm not finding a pulse!"
"On the way!" the driver yelled back.
The report regarding the lack of a pulse brought cheering and renewed energy from the other prisoners on the bus. They shook their chains and stomped their feet on the floor. It was unclear to Bosch whether they knew who Hardy was, or if it was simply bloodlust that had them calling for murder. Through it all, Bosch heard coughing and looked down to see Hardy coming to. His face was still a deep shade of red, and his eyes were glassy. But they focused for a moment on Bosch, until the deputy's shoulder moved between them.
"Okay, we got him back," the deputy reported. "He's breathing."
This report was greeted with a chorus of boos from the men on the bus. Pell let out a high-pitched keening sound. His whole body shook beneath Bosch. The sound seemed to sum up a lifetime of anguish and despair. Chapter 42. That night, Bosch stood on the back deck, looking down at the ribbon of lights on the freeway. He was still wearing his best suit, though the left shoulder had been scuffed with dirt during the struggle with Pell on the bus. He wanted a drink, but wasn't drinking. He'd left the sliding door open so he could hear the music. He'd gone back to the music he always went to in the solemn moments. Frank Morgan on the tenor sax. Nothing better to sculpt the mood. He had canceled his date with Hannah Stone. The events of the day eliminated any desire to celebrate, any desire to even talk. Chilton Hardy had survived the attack on the sheriff's bus largely unscathed. He was transported to the jail ward at County USC Medical Center and would remain there until doctors discharged him. His arraignment would be postponed until then. Clayton Pell was rearrested, and additional charges stemming from the attack were added. A parole violation was also added, and it was clear that Pell was heading back to prison. Normally, Bosch would be pleased to learn that a serial sex offender was going back into lockup. But he couldn't help but be wistful about Pell's situation. He couldn't help but feel somewhat responsible and guilty. Guilty about intervening. When Bosch had put it all together while standing on First Street, he could have let things run their course, and the world would now be rid of a monster, a man as depraved as any Bosch had ever encountered. But Bosch had intervened. He had acted to save the monster, and now his thoughts were clouded with regret. Hardy deserved death, but would likely never get it, or would only get it when it was so far distant in time from his crimes as to almost be meaningless. Until then, he would hold forth in court and in prison, and would enter the halls of the criminal zeitgeist, where men like him were talked about, written about, and in some dark corners even revered. Bosch could have stopped all of that, but hadn't. Adhering to a code of everybody counts or nobody counts hardly seemed to cover it, or excuse it. He knew he would carry the guilt for his actions of the day for a long time. Bosch had spent most of the day writing reports and being interviewed by fellow investigators about the events on the sheriff's bus. It was determined that Pell knew how to get to Hardy, because he knew the system. He knew the methods and routines. He knew that whites were segregated and transported separately, and that he had a good chance of getting on the bus with the man he wanted to kill. He knew that he would be shackled at the hands and feet, and that his hands would be locked to a waist chain. He knew that he could slip that waist chain down over his small hips and beneath his feet, and that it would become his murder weapon. It had been a grand plan, and Bosch had ruined it. The incident was being investigated by the sheriff's department because it had taken place on their jail bus. The deputy who interviewed Bosch had asked him point blank why he had intervened. Bosch simply said he didn't know. He had acted on instinct and impulse without thinking that the world would be a better place without Hardy in it. As Bosch stared down at the unending river of metal and glass, Pell's anguish clawed at him. He had robbed Pell of his one chance at redemption, the moment where he would make up for all the damage inflicted on him, and to his way of thinking, the damage he had inflicted on others. Bosch didn't necessarily agree with it, but he understood it. Everybody is looking for redemption, for something. Bosch had snatched it all away from Pell, and that was why he listened to Frank Morgan's mournful music and wanted to drown himself in drink. He felt sorry for the predator. The doorbell sounded above the tone of the saxophone. Bosch went in, but as he moved through the living room, his daughter bolted out from the bedroom hallway and beat him to the door. She put her hand on the knob and then her eye against the peephole before opening up, just as he had taught her. She paused and then pushed off the door, taking little robot steps backwards and right past Harry.
"It's Kiz,"
she whispered. She turned and went backwards into the hallway so she would have cover. "Okay, well, no need to panic," Bosch said. "I think we can handle Kiz." Bosch opened the door.
"Hello, Harry. How are you?"
"I'm good, Kiz. What brings you out?"
"Oh, I guess I was hoping to maybe sit out on the deck with you for a little bit."
Bosch didn't respond at first. He just looked at her until the moment became embarrassingly long.
"Harry, knock, knock. Anyone home?"
Yeah, sorry. I was just... come on in." He opened the door wide and let her in. She knew her way to the deck. I don't have anything alcoholic in the house. I've got water and some sodas."
"Water's fine. I'm going back downtown after."
As she passed by the bedroom hallway, Maddie was still standing there.
"Hi, Kiz."
"Oh, hey there, Maddie. How you doing, girl?"
"I'm good.
Glad to hear it.
You let me know if you ever need anything, okay?"
"Thank you."
Bosch turned into the kitchen and grabbed two bottles of water out of the refrigerator. He was only a few seconds behind Ryder,
but she was already at the rail taking in the view and the sounds. He slid the door closed behind him, so Maddie wouldn't hear whatever it was Kiz had come to say.
"Always amazes me how, no matter where you go in this city, you can't get away from the traffic," she said. "Even up here."
Bosch handed her a bottle.
"So if you're going back downtown and working tonight, this must be an official visit.
Let me guess. I'm getting written up for stealing one of the chief's motorcade cars."
Ryder waved that away like it was a fly.
"That was nothing, Harry. But I am here to warn you."
"About what?"
"It's starting. With Irving. This next month is going to be all-out war, and there are going to be casualties. Just be ready."
"It's me, Kiz. Be specific. What's Irving doing?"
"Well, for starters, he's gone to the police commission, and he wants them to review the whole Chilton Hardy case, from bust to bus. And they'll do it. Most of them have their seats because of his patronage. They'll do what he says."
Bosch thought of his relationship with Hannah Stone and what Irving could do with it, and jumping the Hardy warrant. If Irving could get to that, he'd be holding press conferences every day till the election.
"Fine, let them come," he said. "I'm clean on it."
"I hope so, Harry. But I'm not as worried about your part in the investigation as I am about the 20 years before that, when Hardy was running below the radar, and there was no investigation. We're going to look very bad when all of that comes out."
Now Bosch understood why she was there and had come in person. This was how High Jingle worked, and this was what Irving had told him would happen. Bosch knew that the more the Open Unsolved Squad documented the crimes and victims of Chilton Hardy, the greater the public outrage would be over his seeming freedom to act with impunity for more than 20 years. The guy was never concerned enough about the police even to move out of the area.
"So what do you want, Kiz? You want us to stop at Lily Price? Is that it? Tie it all up in one case and go for the death penalty? After all, we can only kill him once, right? Never mind the other victims, like Mandy Phillips with her photo hanging in Hardy's fucking dungeon. I guess she's one of the casualties you're talking about."
"No, Harry. I don't want you to stop. We can't stop. First of all, the story's gone international. And we want justice for all of the victims. You know that."
"Then what are you telling me, Kiz? What do you want?"
She paused, probably looking for a way to avoid saying it out loud. But there was no way. Bosch waited.
"Just slow things down a bit," she finally said.
Bosch nodded. He understood. "The election. We slow things down until the election and hope Irving gets dumped. That's what you want?" He knew that once she said it, their relationship would never be the same.
"Yes, it's what I want," she said. "It's what we all want, for the good of the department."
Those five words, "the good of the department," they never added up to anything but High Jingo. Bosch nodded and then turned and looked off at the view. He didn't want to look at Kiz Ryder anymore.
"Come on, Harry," Ryder said. "We have Irving on the ground. Don't give him what he needs to get back up and hurt us, to continue to damage the department."
He leaned over the wood railing and looked directly down into the brush below the deck.
"It's funny," he said. "I think in all of this, Irvin Irving turns out to be the one who had things right, who was probably even telling the truth."
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"It didn't make sense to me. Why would he press the case if he knew it could come back to his own complicity in a pay-for-play scam?"
"Harry, there's no need to go there. The case is closed."
"The answer was that he pressed the case because he wasn't complicit. He was clean." He reached into his soiled suit coat and pulled out the folded photocopy of the phone message Irving had given him. He had been carrying it with him since then. Without looking at Ryder,
He handed it to her and waited as she unfolded the page and scanned it.
"What's this?"
she said. "It's Irving's proof of innocence."
"It's a piece of paper, Harry. This could have been slapped together at any time. It's not proof of anything."
"Except you and I and the chief. We all know it's real. It's true."
"Speak for yourself. This is worthless."
She refolded it and handed it back. Bosch put it back in his pocket. "You used me, Kiz, to get to Irving. You used his son's death. You used the things I found out. All to get a bullshit story in the newspaper you hoped would knock him to the mat." She didn't respond for a long time, and when she did, it was just the company line, not an acknowledgement of anything.
30 days, Harry. Irving is a thorn in the department's side. If we can get rid of him, we can build a bigger and better department, and that makes it a safer and better city."
Bosch stood up straight and cast his eyes back out at the view. The reds were turning purple. It was getting dark.
"Sure, why not?" he said. "But if you have to become him to get rid of him, what's the difference?"
Ryder banged her palms lightly on the railing, a signal that she had said enough and was finished with this conversation.
"I'm going to go, Harry. I have to get back."
"Sure."
"Thanks for the water."
"Yeah."
He heard her steps on the wood planking as she moved toward the sliding door.
"So was what you said to me the other day bullshit, Kiz?" he asked, his back still turned to her. "Was that just part of the play?"
The steps stopped, but she didn't say anything.
"When I called you and told you about Hardy, you talked about the noble work we do. You said, 'This is why we do this.' Was that just a line, Kiz?"
It was a while before she spoke. Bosch knew she was looking at him and waiting for him to turn and look at her, but he couldn't do it.
"No," she finally said, "it wasn't just a line. It was the truth. And someday you may appreciate that I do what I need to do so you can do what you need to do."
She waited for his response, but he said nothing.
"Good night, Harry."
He heard the door slide open and then closed. She was gone. Bosch looked out at the fading light and waited a moment before speaking.
"I don't think so," he said.
This has been an Hachette Audio production of The Drop, written by Michael Connelly, read by Len Carreyrou. Executive producer, Michelle McGonigal. Produced and directed by Dennis Kao. Post-production by Jennifer Nix, Chris Candio, and John Kovarik. The Drop is also available in print and as an ebook from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 2011 by Hieronymus Incorporated. Audio production copyright 2011 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Except as permitted under the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, no part of this publication may be reproduced, distributed, or transmitted in any form or by any means, or stored in a database or retrieval system without the prior written permission of the publisher. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events, or locales is entirely coincidental.